Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network.
Is The Odyssey the last movie in the Let's Get Matt Damon Home cinematic universe? And what are our thoughts on that Doomsday trailer, which finally dropped this week? Hello, this is Systematic Geekology. We are the priest of the geeks, and I am one of your geekologists, Kevin Schaefer, here with Evan and Jill. How are y'all doing tonight?
I'm so good. So happy to be here and talk about this movie.
Oh, this is one I've been anticipating all year. Like, I think even more so the discussion than, the movie itself was like my most anticipated all year, but I was so, I was going to be so excited just to do the Aftermath podcast on this. To have the Doomsday trailer drop in the same week, you know, this is exciting. But yeah, Evan, how are you tonight?
I'm just rocking along.
Did you have an odyssey of yourself this week?
Yes.
Okay.
I wish I saw it for the second time, but I haven't found the time yet.
I have seen it twice, so I'm nice. I'll definitely talk about that. But yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you all for joining us tonight. This is our What's News episode, where we talk about all the latest things in geek culture. And of course, tonight we're going to be doing a spoiler discussion review of The Odyssey. Granted, I mean, you've had 3,000 years to read the book, and you know, you've had a week to see the movie, so I'm not really too worried about spoilers there. But we're also going to talk about the Avengers Doomsday trailer, which finally dropped this week after a lot of anticipation and wondering when that was going to come out. So we'll be talking about those, and we'll be talking about other geek stuff. Very excited. And if you are new to Systematic Geekology, welcome. Whether you're watching here on YouTube or you're listening to this later, thank you so much for joining us. And if you click on the link in the description, wherever you're watching or listening, you can find out ways to support us. You can support us on Fourth Wall and check out some cool merchandise there. If you like this episode, check out the rest. We've got a lot of good discussions on all things geek, and we have a great team of hosts here. So check us out. And I want to give a shout out to Daniel Sigman, one of our supporters here. Thank you so much for all you do. It really helps keep the show going. And if you become a supporter, you get a shout out on the show as well. So click on those links and like, rate, review, all those things. But awesome. Well, Evan and Jill, before we get into our main topics, let us get into our classic lightning round and talk about some of the other things we're geeking out on. Jill, we'll start with you.
I am geeking out over the trailer for I Play Rocky. I just saw it this week, and I'm so excited. Rocky is maybe my favorite movie of all time. I love Sylvester Stallone. I love this whole universe. This is Peter Farrelly movie. He is awesome. And it's the same actor that played Al Pacino in The Offer, which was also a biopic about making a movie about Italian Americans. So I'm just very excited to see it. Can't wait.
He's going to be the go-to person. They need a biopic. I'm trying to think what they would do next. But it is uncanny how much he looks and sounds like Stallone. I almost thought, did they do a de-aging? That's how right on point it was. But that does look really good. I mean, I know you're a huge Rocky fan. Like, I mean, I love Rocky too. But like we did our Ryan Coogler episode, and you had infinitely more knowledge about the Rocky universe than I did. So it was fascinating. But yeah, but I know
it's a weird obsession.
I mean, we all have like I think it's fascinating. But it is a fascinating franchise in terms of like, you know, they made all the original ones they made, then rebooting with Creed and. You know, the like going from this, like, whoever thought that it would go from this one, you know, underdog movie to one of the biggest franchises of all time. So, yes, that one does look good. I do love how not subtle the title is, but, you know, it'll be fun, though.
Right.
I was just like, I was just trying to think of like alternate title, they could have like some kind of underdog thing, but they're like, nope, I play Rocky. That's the movie. But yeah.
That's it.
I saw the trailer for it, I was reminded of The Shame, because I've never seen not one of the films.
Really?
Think I saw some of the first one at some point when I was a kid, and then I saw some of the Creed. But nope, I don't have any knowledge of it. Shame. Shame on the number.
Well, this can be your introduction, and then you'll be very interested and want to go binge all of it.
Bingo. There you go.
And dude, the Creed movies are excellent. That's one of those, like, I mean, in terms of like legacy sequels, it's also like reboot. I mean, they're great.
Yeah. Oh, I mm-hmm. didn't think about that.
Yeah.
A legacy sequel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Sweet. Cool. Excellent pick, Jill. Evan, what about you? What else are you kicking out on?
I'm doing the Clayface trailer that just that literally just dropped a couple hours ago.
Yep.
I've seen that a few times, and my first thing was, I'm going to be watching it like this, because that's how I watch a pig scene in The Odyssey, and that's exactly what's going on too. And I was like, oh dear Lord, I don't want to sit through this. But and I'm watching the neighborhood friendly Spider-Man on
great series. Yeah,
it's fun. It's super fun. Like, I like all the little twists on the characters and stuff, and the animation is super fun. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
That was one series, like, when I remember when they originally announced it, they said it was going to be like the Tom Holland Spider-Man year one kind of thing. Yeah. And then they pivoted and made it its own thing. But I'm actually really glad they did it, because they're less tied to continuity. And I mean, Coleman Domingo as Norman Osborn is fantastic. I mean, they're like, there's a lot of great voice talents in it. But I like that it's its own thing. And it's still, I mean, it could still kind of fit within the MCU, but it's also not in the same earth. And I just like it's a great show. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited for season.
Is this on Disney Plus?
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. So it dropped, I want to say, like 2 years ago, like around the same time as X-Men 97. And now season 2 is coming out. What is it, like, is that next month or 2 months? Something like, it's coming up.
It says soon. Soon. Yeah.
Because 97 season 2 has like a couple more episodes, and then. Yeah. Friendly Neighborhood comes up after that. Perfect. But so the only disappointing thing is that me and Christian have had this conversation multiple times of like TV today, even animation, they're like 10 episode seasons, so it flies by, and it should be longer, but it's still really good. Yeah, so I definitely recommend that one. But excellent choice. For me, so this weekend I'm going to GalaxyCon here in Raleigh and a NoahCon concert. So I've been geeking out on like both very different things. But yeah, I mean, like, I've been playing NoahCon nonstop along with like Olivia Rodrigo and Gracie Abrams, like all the like pretty like sad music, but also pop and all that, you know, like that's kind of my jam lately.
Gracie. Yes.
Yeah. J.J. Abrams' daughter. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
No way. Yep. Cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So, like that. I got that concert on Saturday, and then I'm going to GalaxyCon Friday and Sunday. So, very excited for all that. There's some really good creators that'll be there, and celebrities as well. So, I'll talk more about it in the, like, post-con on the next episode, but... very excited for that. So it'll be a good weekend. But yeah.
Cool.
Very awesome. Cool. Well, let's get into it. I know we have some big topics to talk tonight. First, we're going to start with the much anticipated trailer for Avengers Doomsday, which finally dropped this week. Now, of course, I don't know whose marketing team thought, like, oh, let's just drop it online a week after the biggest movie of the year, like, instead of putting it in theaters. But, you know, decisions are made, because I'm sure Nolan would have been, I mean, yeah, Disney's up, like, especially with, you know, Downey in it and all that, like, he would have been fine having it come with the Odyssey or something else, but anyway, you dropped on Monday, so.
I would have preferred it more than the Mother, the freaking Mother.
Oh, trailer. That other Holy mommy moly. Movie? Yeah, did you, what Jill, did you see that trailer when you saw Odyssey? Is that Jessica
Chastain
movie?
No, because I got there right as the movie was starting.
Got it.
It was, freaking dodged a bullet.
Like, it was like this, like, a bit like this movie with Jessica Chastain where she plays, like, a mom, and then she has, like, some kind of demon clone, and so, who's terrorizing her family, and it's just called The Other Mommy. But, I mean, it looks like very difficult to find an October horror kind of movie, but it was a very weird one to place with the Odyssey. Yeah, other than, I mean, yeah, Jessica Chastain has worked with Nolan before in Interstellar, but still, it felt weird alongside, like, Dune and some of the others. But, yeah, that
got
one.
Got it.
Yeah, it made my dad jump because, like, I saw it within the second time, and we saw it in IMAX, and he's not a horror guy. And so, like, he was like, oh, man, that looks creepy. I was like, yeah, I don't know. But it was an odd one. But yeah, I think I agree. I think this one would have been better. Evan, you and I have talked about it, but Jill, I don't know if we've talked about it much. So, like, where do you kind of stand in terms of your anticipation or lack thereof? I don't know, like, for Doomsday, and your just thoughts on the trailer as well.
So I am so excited, and I'm actually mad that we keep getting these little bits dropped every couple months. Like, just give us the movie. And honestly, I don't care if this movie is 6 hours long. I'm so excited to see all of these characters, all of these storylines come together. Like, thrilled. This trailer I loved. There's a super Thor heavy. And then I think I've talked about this with both of you guys before. My introduction to Marvel comics and the MCU was through my kids, and started, you know, so many years ago when they were little kids. And I just, Jack and I watched the trailer together. That's my almost 20-year-old. And I'm like, wait, why is Dr. Doom so strong? This doesn't make any sense. And he goes, oh no, mom, you just didn't read those comics. Like, he's actually kills Thanos in one of the comics. Like, he's super strong. And I'm like, oh, I gotta, like, Immortal reorient Kombat, my whole brain around this Dr. Doom that, like, can stop Thor's hammer with two fingers. That's wild.
And actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's my big concern with, like, I mean, I'm still excited for Doomsday, but, like, that's my biggest concern is for the general public that isn't familiar with the character, because in the movies, he's only appeared in the 2005 Fantastic Four movies, where the actor was good, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, like, the powerful Doctor Doom. He was a cheesy villain. And then we're not acknowledging the existence of the 2015 one. That doesn't exist. So for general audiences, yeah, they really don't know a lot about Doom as a character and how powerful he is. Because when I went with a friend last year to the Fantastic Four, like, he also did, he thought, like, Doom was like a B villain that they were just, like, reinventing because RDJ's play. He's like, he was surprised that he's, like, more powerful than Galactus. He's like, that Galactus, like, eats planets. Like, what's that? I was like, yes, he does, but there is, you know, this rich history with Doom, and, you know, like, they definitely highlighted in the trailer here, but that is while I'm excited for the movie, that's my biggest reservation, is they have done no build up to him whatsoever. Because, you know, Thanos, yes, like, he did not have his own movie before Infinity War, but there was the momentum built up with all the post-credit scenes, all the lore surrounding the Infinity Stones. Like, they were building up to this character, and then all of the storylines with all the Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, all of that had been set up and established, and so you could have the movie with Infinity War from Thanos' perspective and have him as the protagonist, and it worked. And in that movie, you got exactly, you understood exactly who he was, what his motivation was, what he wanted to do. That's my biggest thing with, like, I mean, because, I mean, I, you know, I've still seen every MCU movie in theaters, but I cannot deny that it's been rocky the past few years, and there's been a lot of, like, you know, back and forth, and, you know, and characters I love, like Shang-Chi, I love that movie, has not shown up since then, and, you know, he's in this right. one, but, you know, for how much, I don't know, because it's going to be a massive juggling act to both introduce an iconic villain and, you know, have all of these characters play out, introduce the concept of incursions and the multiverse imploding. So, yeah, that's my biggest concern. I did like the trailer, but sorry, I'll shut up for a sec. Evan, what are your thoughts on both, like, Doomsday in general and what you thought of the trailer?
You guys said what I was gonna say. Yeah, it's great trailer. I can't wait for Doom. He's crazy powerful, and that a visual. That's a great visual of just him stopping the with the two fingers. Great visual. Instantly tells the audience, boom, he's a menace. He is a problem. But then again, I also feel the same way as you, Kevin. Like, this is coming out of nowhere, pretty much. And I don't know how to say this, but it's also a reality that we live in because of the shift from Kang.
Yeah.
Unless they do some kind of a retconning that, oh, we were planning this the whole time, and that kind of works, then okay, cool. But I'm going to keep my judgment until I see the film, because I am crazy excited for this film. But I'm not going to lie, I felt when I saw it, I was like, yeah, cool. But it's still the same thing. It still feels like Avengers, and I'm like, I think I have superhero fatigue. And then what gave me hope was, nah, dude, I can't wait for a brand new day. Like, that is, I am more excited about that than what I am for Doomsday, if I'm honest. So
yeah. Oh, I'm stoked for Spider-Man. I mean, because that's one where that storyline has been established. Like, they built momentum with a character. And granted, I know I was just saying, like, this doesn't compare to how well done the Infinity Saga was. That said, the Infinity Saga was not nearly as meticulously planned out as people think. True. Like, they were making it up as they went along as well. Like, they were constantly shifting plans. Like, I know I mentioned before the YouTube channel Breakdowns and Blockbusters, but the host there goes through all of those, like, you know, what almost was the Avengers, what almost was Civil War, etc. Like, they were constantly rewriting as well, and they made it work. But I think it is a little different because, exactly, with the Kang thing and, you know, shifting, like, I think it was always in the plan to bring Doom in, but I don't think they anticipated to do it first. Like, they wanted to do Kang, and then they had to pivot away from that. And so I think Doom would have been in, like, Secret Wars, but you know, not right away. And, you know, I know I don't write for Marvel, and they're, you know, they're, Kevin Feige's not listening to this podcast, but maybe we can hope. But I think of how cool it would have been if they had done an entire Doom movie before this that was an adaptation of the Ed Brubaker Books of Doom miniseries, which is one of the best, like, Village and Origin story comics of all time. And you could have it entirely from his perspective. You don't even need the Fantastic Four hardly in it. Like, that would have been a great story, and then do the big Avengers crossover with Doom to build them up. But that said, they do a great job in this trailer of establishing, no, this is, like you said, a terrifying villain. Not only that, but it's when they're talking about the threats here and Thor saying, like, we need a miracle. I think he's referring more to the fact that incursions are coming and the multiverse is about to die. Doom is more an instigator, and he's going to try to, like, take over. So I think there are multiple threats here. Jill also, okay, because I'm wearing my X-Men shirt, like, that was my biggest, like, you know, like, delight here, seeing them all in their glorious 90s costumes. But,
whoa, well,
yes.
Yes, oh my gosh, so good. Because, like, were you, like, were there, other than Doom, like, were there any particular characters or teams here you were just like, yes, like, I mean, so excited to see?
Well, I think everyone knows in the group that I'm like a big Magneto fan. So seeing him and Professor X, like old, that those are my favorite characters. I'm very excited to see what happens there. Although I need timeline. I'm going to need someone to lay it out for me because I thought Professor X was dead in this world. We grieved for him and Logan.
Same here.
It's a little confusing for me. That's okay.
I dropped the trailer in a work channel the other day, and my boss was like, I haven't watched all the X-Men movies by any chance. And I just said, I was like, okay, I love the X-Men movies, but it is the most confusing, convoluted timeline in, I think, any movie franchise, like maybe even more so than Terminator. So I like, they're like, I don't even know if you need to try to wrap your mind around the logic of like Xavier dies, but he comes back, but then he's at, like, your head's gonna hurt. Like I've tried before too. Because they, like, that was the whole point of Days of Future Past, was they were trying to, like, you know, bridge everything, like create a new timeline there, but then they still had inconsistencies with going forward with Apocalypse, and then with Logan, like, none of it lines up. I just kind of almost view them as individual. And there are theories, too, that the reason incursions are happening in the multiverse is, like, colliding here is that the X-Men started it all, and, like, their Earth was the original one, and they've done the most time travel and screwing with the timeline.
That's
going to be the instigator. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, I'll take that. And then notably absent were Wolverine and Storm, and they have both been super cryptic when people ask them in interviews if they're going to be in this movie. So I do kind of still think we're going to get those X-Men that show up, even if it's not a big part.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes me excited.
Having Barry coming back will be...
That would be awesome.
Perfect.
Wild, right?
That would be perfect.
Yeah. Because Wolverine, I definitely think he's going to be in Secret
Which
Wars.
One?
I don't... Like, yeah. I think that Hugh Jackman, like, old man Logan. Like, I mean, there. Yeah. I mean, I do have mixed feelings, but, like, I think they eventually need to retire Hugh for the rebooted X-Men, like, which is the other thing. They're supposed to announce the new X-Men cast this weekend at Comic-Con for the Mutant Saga. I don't even know if they'll adapt Wolverine there, because I think they do need time with that. Like, I love Wolverine, but they need time to focus on some of the other mutants. But I think we'll still have him in Secret Wars, and then maybe be around as, like, old man Logan, but they need a new one, you know, post Secret Wars, just to, like, pass on the mantle. I love Hugh Jackman, but he can't do it forever.
We just wanted to take a moment to ask you all to consider sponsoring our show. You can do so by becoming a member in the website down in the show's description. It takes a lot to keep this show running, as far as editing equipment, paying the site that platforms our show to, all the different mediums where you listen to your podcast, going to events. There's a lot of costs behind this. And I was thinking of the most fun way to do this ad, and I was going to do, like, you know, one of those songs where it's like, there's a log on the lake, and then by the end, it's like there's a speck in the eye of the flea on the log on the lake or something. Then I realized that would just take too long, and I don't want to bore you guys. I'm going to list some of the benefits you can get for being a member as a thank you to those who do take some of their funds to help sponsor our show. At the free tier, you get some perks, including, like, free episodes. Yeah, you don't even have to pay to get extra content that goes along with our annual theme, or even in collaboration with the Rethinking Faith, we're going to be doing Rethinking Comics, and you can get that on our website if you want to follow that series. As you move up to some of the paid tiers, you get access to exclusive merch only for our sponsors. You get access to the bonus questions we do each thing, and all kinds of things that are like shout outs for all tiers. You can get a shout out on the episode. All of the tiers come with some incredible benefits. As you go through some of the different ones moving up, you know, you get different percent off of our merchandise. We just straight up give you money towards purchasing stuff. Some of the tiers just get $10 a month to buy stuff from us. We do free giveaways. Some of the tiers come with birthday presents, Christmas presents, free t-shirt for our members. There are lots of things that we do because we just want to show our appreciation for those who are able to take their funds and sponsor our show. But we also want to remind you, whether or not you can financially support the show, we appreciate everyone who takes their time to listen to this. Remember that verse that's like, perhaps you're here for a time such as this. Well, perhaps you're here for a time such as sponsoring our show, or perhaps you're not here to listen to ads, and I should wrap this up.
And something tells me, I don't have any knowledge, but I have a vibe that they're gonna spin something. They're gonna surprise us all, and a Miles Morales is gonna show up.
I mean, that would be awesome. Like,
who do you think it's gonna be? Who would be a live action Miles Morales?
Right.
I know. I thought about that too. They talked about Lucas from Stranger Things, but I think he would be better Static Shock. DC to make Static as soon as possible. That's one they're just sitting on, and he would be perfect for that. So like I kind of Miles. Honestly, I think they should go with the lesser known. Like, I mean, maybe like someone from TV or something like that. But I kind of want it to be not an instantly recognizable name. I could see him make it. Yeah, I think Miles, if not in Doomsday, definitely in Secret Wars. I just think, I mean, because they're also saying Secret Wars is going to focus heavily on the young Avengers and those characters. Yeah. So like, I think that would be the perfect opportunity there. I mean, because this one is going to be a massacre. We're going to see a lot die and universes implode. So we'll see who's left and also who makes it to Battleworld. I was having this conversation too at my Star Wars RPG last night, which I know, I mean, like the one nerdy thing to the next, but we were talking about this and we were just like, I'm like, this is my biggest concern about this movie, as excited as I am for it. I'm like, how do you convey concepts like this to quote unquote, like citizens out there who don't live and breathe this stuff like we do? Like, I mean, like, I just you have to make, I mean, and this movie especially, it needs to make $1 billion to, like, for Marvel to go forward. Like, they've put too much money into it. They have, you know, every actor in the MCU who's ever been there, who is like ridiculous salaries and everything. They brought RDJ back and all the Avengers. Like, it needs to do extremely well. And that's my, I mean, I know it did, it already made a huge amount in pre-ticket sales. I got my tickets the other night too, but like opening weekend, like beyond opening weekend, it has to really sustain itself after that. So that's my only thing is like, for people who are more casual moviegoers or casual fans of the MCU, will they really respond well to it? That's, I think that's the biggest question mark right now.
Yeah.
But that said,
so
fun
Kevin,
trailer though. Yeah. Yeah.
Kevin, so hopefully as a cool segue, what Cyclops do you mean in your description there?
Yes. Okay. So excellent segue. I think that actually goes right into our next topic. So no, I did not play Scott Summers in any play.
Oh.
I would have been kind of cool. Beast is my favorite X-Men anyway. So the night before Odyssey came out, Jill commented on my story here. I put on my Instagram story that I was in a play of the Odyssey in high school.
Oh yeah.
I was the voice of the Cyclops, Polyphemus.
Cool.
I should know the text and everything going like better going into this, but it had been a long time since I'd done that play and since I've read. Nonetheless, that goes perfectly into our next topic. So yes, let's get into it. The big Christopher Nolan epic adaptation of Homer's The Odyssey. When I saw it the first, so I have seen it twice. When I saw it the first time, we were friends and I were coming out of it. And we were just like, I mean, what do we say? We're like, oh yeah, that was good. Like, I mean, like, we were just like, I mean, we were just breathless in terms of how, what a spectacle it was. What an experience. I want to hear from y'all for, okay. So I have a 2-part question to start this conversation. So talk about what was your background with Homer's The Odyssey. Like I said, with mine, it was the play, and I had read the in high school the year before that. But what was your background to that? And also, what's kind of your background with Christopher Nolan films in general? Are you a fan? Because as big a director is, I know, there are still critics of his too, people who aren't as big super fans, and, that's totally valid. So, Jill, we'll start with you. Like, what was your background with The Odyssey and then with Christopher Nolan?
So I read The Odyssey fairly recently because my daughter was reading it in high school and I try to just like you know, if they're interested in something, I'll get interested too. So I read it, I guess, 3 years ago. And then she went on a whole Greek mythology phase of her life. And so she's read all of these. They're kind of like, I don't know, they're like romance fantasy books. Circe has been her favorite one. There's Achilles. Anyway, she loves them and fills me in. But Odyssey is the only one I read with her. And I enjoy good Greek mythology. I think that's what the Avengers are, after all, is our modern day mythology. And I am not a huge Christopher Nolan stan. Like, I enjoy his movies. Tenet is one of my favorites, but I think, Kevin, I told you before, I've seen it three times, and every time I'm more confused than the last. It's just very hard to follow, but I enjoy that. I don't mind getting lost in something. And I have some critiques of Nolan. Overall, though, he's a fantastic movie maker. And when I saw that you had seen this movie, Kevin, and enjoyed it so much and called it a masterpiece, I was like, that's it. I got to go. So I went and took myself to the movies all alone. And I was so happy I did. I loved it. Loved it.
Did you get to see it on IMAX?
Nope. But my husband wants to see it. And so we'll go back and watch it on IMAX.
That's what I did the second time. The first one, it was still a big screen, but it was like the premium format at my theater. And then I saw IMAX. Oh, and I forgot to mention with Doomsday. We forgot to mention that you can see Avengers Doomsday in Infinity Vision, which is definitely not made up by Disney and Marvel as a marketing employee. Like, I don't know if you know, but yeah, for those of you who don't know, quick aside, but for those of you who don't know, that is because Dune Part 3 is coming out the same day, same weekend, and they got all the IMAX screens. So in order to have like some kind of marketing prestige there, like Disney just made up a new type of theater, basically experience, and called it Infinity Vision, which again, I think that's BS, but they could have just shared the IMAX screens or had them come out in separate weeks. That said, Odyssey, I did. So I saw it in not IMAX the first night. And then I went with my dad on Sunday and saw it in IMAX there. And you're in for a treat there, even having seen the movie already. Yeah. But yeah. Evan, what about you? So background with the Odyssey text and then with Nolan.
So yeah. With the text of the Odyssey, I read it in middle school, I think, but I didn't read it, if you know what I mean. Like, I couldn't comprehend it. So I pretended I did to a pass, and that's how I left it.
As
pretty
one does.
Much. Yeah. So I didn't get it. However, a Wishbone episode of the Odyssey lived with me forever. And watching this film, I had so many memories, fond memories of they just flooded. And I was like, I remember like my old house and the floor that was so weird and kind of broken, and just I it kind of overwhelmed me for a second. I'm like, wow, I completely just so I have that experience, and like a lot of people, to be honest, if I'm honest, kind of like the Bible, I thought this stuff happened in real life. Like, I thought this was literal truth. So I had to break away from that and have a little bit of a deconstruction.
Was it the sorts. Cyclops that you were like, maybe this isn't real.
There's a whole episode here with this. Like, I can get into it, but we don't got the time.
Okay.
So, yeah. No, trust me. Like, I'm very gullible. If I see something, I believe it.
I don't think that's gullible, though. Like, that's the fascinating thing about mythology and the power. Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, there are grown men on the internet right now arguing with professors, PhDs in Greek mythology, saying Helen of Troy was real, and how dare she be played by a black woman. Yep. Like, well, she hatched out of an egg.
Yeah.
And that's not real. And her dad was a swan.
And so that is what I'm talking about. I used to be that person. And then I realized, I was like, uh-oh, hold on. So I went back and I kind of, I did my legwork. And good. I would love to read it again and see how my adult brain will process it. Because, when I was just like, the cognitive dissonance was massive. I was like, wait a minute. So
that's cool.
But
see, that's fascinating. Oh, and my comment was not to justify, oh gosh, those people that are like racist, like
I have empathy for them, but like, it's so much. It's way overboard. Like, guys.
I also don't know. Oh, no, Evan, I know you posted earlier, but I saw that. Jill, I don't know if you saw this, but like, Elon Musk is apparently going to make an AI adaptation of the Odyssey by end of year that is quote unquote more accurate to
historically
accurate. Yep.
I wish I had more empathy because that sent me. I was just like, oh my god.
Well, I think one of the things too that people don't like often discuss is that the Odyssey was in existence for probably 600 years before it was ever even written down. The way that history was told, even the books of the Bible, the way history was told was oral history. 100%. And it's meant to be interpreted by the culture that's telling the story. Like, of course, narrative is going to shift. The words, the language people use is going to shift as it moves into a different culture. It's actually one of the coolest parts about being a Christian. Like, my big awakening, or I guess, like, I don't really use the word deconstruction, but that's the simplest way to say it. The beginning of my deconstruction.
Right. Sure, right? Was
talking to Christians in South America and first like hearing how they read the Bible from the bottom up, and being an American that has always read the Bible from the top down, like blew my mind. And that's
great description. That,
these great historical pieces like the Iliad and the Odyssey and, you know, Norse mythology and Christian mythology. Some people will be upset that I use that phrase, but I do. It's meant to be interpreted by the culture that's interpreting it. Yep. It's bingo, silly to like historically accurate. Come on.
One example of this, which I learned in my research, as you pointed out, I could be wrong because I just been doing this since I heard about the film, but that fact that she was born from an egg, that was from a version of a, that came from an interpretation that came a lot later, which I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like,
very cool.
That's very cool, right? Like, I love that. That is how these stories, they will survive because they inspire the creativity after they are gone. Yeah. I think that's just so beautiful. And that goes into the experience that I had because me and my wife, we were like, should we take my son? He is 8. He seems kind of interested, but I don't want him to be bored. And I don't want him to have it wasn't the violence and stuff like that. We were just kind of worried that it was going to go over his head and he wasn't going to have a good time. But no. Like, I'm tearing up about thinking about it now. He freaking loved this movie.
That's so cool.
He laughed when he was supposed to laugh. He hated the Josh Pattinson character. He hated him with all his guts. Yes, he gets it. His attention was held the whole time. Like, all 3 hours, he was just glued and like, and he had questions and we had to go back and be like, okay, this is called a flashback and this and that. But I was just so glad that he got it.
That's so cool. And that's a long time to hold an 8-year-old's attention.
Right. I was just like, here we go. Here we go. And
was he terrified? Or was he terrified during the CRC scene? Because that's one of my 100%. Favorite scenes in the movie. And also, Samantha Morton, absolutely brilliant. But I
was too.
Yeah. But yeah.
I was like, scary.
I guess I'm watching this now.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah. But to answer your Christopher Nolan one, and that kind of goes into it, he's our a modern day, I don't know how to call him. He's just one of the greats. He's just one of the greats. I blame Star Wars for, I blame Star Wars and George Lucas for, like, you know, just kind of putting words to my fandom is.
Yeah.
And then I blame Memento and Christopher Nolan in kind of funneling that kind of into a trade that I could go and become a filmmaker. And yeah, so that Memento is a huge part in my life. It's one of those kind of like BC and AD kind of things.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's similar for me. I mean, I think Nolan had a profound impact on me as a storyteller, like, you know, seeing, of course, the Dark Knight trilogy, you know, at the perfect time when I was a kid and in high school. And then also The Prestige had, you know, a huge impact on me.
Oh, gosh,
and it's still one of my favorites by him. I love that movie.
That is one of the best films ever made.
It really is. Oh, my gosh. I was rewatching it recently, and it still holds up. Not just like how the twist is done, but the performances, the energy, the execution.
Hello, guys. I really hate to interrupt, but my name's TJ, and I'm here to tell you about our new merch. We have incredible new stuff with Fourth Wall. We have just partnered with them as a new store. They have a lot more to offer, which means we have a lot more to offer. We can now offer you beautiful Comfort Colors t-shirts. They're so comfy. I wear mine all the time. And we've got it all now. Cups, hats, backpacks, pajamas. If you want your Systematic Geekology pajamas, you know where to go. My personal favorite is actually our Throne of Geeks shirt. It is Comfort Colors, you know, blue, black, green, red, orange. And the shirts are just so nice. And the shirt itself, we've got the Throne of Iron geeked out. Because, you know, that's our brand. We've got Mjolnir on there, the Buster Sword, Trident. Basically just the coolest weapons from our favorite properties are on the shirt instead of a bunch of normal boring swords from the boring series Game of Thrones. So check that out, and thank you.
I've always been a huge Nolan fan. That said, like, as I've gotten older, I've come to understand some of the criticisms as well, like particularly his characterization of women characters has, you know, not always been stellar. He usually casts amazing actresses, but I saw a meme the other day where it was like going through Nolan's filmography. It was like, the wife is dead, the wife is missing, the wife is gone, you know, like, and kind of like, and I was like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. I do want to talk about that too, how, because I think this movie, not only is it, obviously an epic portrayal of, you know, an epic adaptation of the text, and like we were talking about the ways that Homer has influenced comic books and modern mythology, all of that is there, but I think this is also an excellent depiction of PTSD, and it really zeroes in on the emotional impact of the character, and it's not portraying Odysseus as an unflinching hero in any way. It's a really complex portrayal there, but I do want to talk about how it portrays some of the other characters as well and what we thought of that. We can get into that first, because who were y'all some of your favorite characters, I mean, other than Odysseus, like, and even ones you hated, like, I mean, Pattinson's, I hated the character, but he was brilliant, in the role. Mm-hmm. The ones that were really stood out to me were, John Leguizamo was incredible as, and his character, I feel like, kind of emulated Homer in a way, like he was kind of like the storyteller in the background, all-knowing one. He was incredible. I love Samantha Morton in the role of Circe, and how that entire scene done as this like mini body horror film was brilliant. But Jill, who were like, what did you think of the portrayal of some of the other characters, like Penelope, Telemachus, any of the myriad of supporting characters?
Yeah, I think give Anne Hathaway the Oscar right now. She got snubbed for Les Mis, so just give it to her for this, and that's fine.
Yep.
Brilliant portrayal. I think that character was written really well, and I just think she knocked it out of the park. I loved Penelope. The like surprise one for me was Himesh Patel. He loved excellent. His character.
Same. I didn't know that he was the main character in that movie Yesterday. Do you know that film?
I didn't know that was him.
Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Great pick. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. And I really liked the Travis Scott character. Not that it stood out like, oh, that was such a great acting performance, but I think like the brilliance of having the storyteller, because as I said, this is a story that's meant to be orated, and having like a popular rapper and then kind of tying in that rap takes its history from this oral storytelling tradition that is African, specifically West African. Like, it just was really cool. I loved his character and seeing him there. And that it opened with him. Yeah. It opened and it closed with him because he did the closing credit song too. And then Agamemnon, I didn't see, like, you didn't see his face hardly at all, but that was the most badass costume I have ever seen. Like, from the back with the spine, you know, coming down off of the helmet. Mm-hmm. That was so cool. Like, that actually is the visual that's going to stick with me the most.
Benny Safdie and that role, like, that was pretty, like, that was pretty great. I loved your meme there of the, like, I knew who this was before he even took off the mask and, like, had the Squidward meme just there. But, yeah, like, I was thinking, too, it's like, oh, rise to the presence of Dark Helmet, you know, like, as soon as he comes out. Like,
well, that, too. Was just,
yeah. But it was, all jokes aside, that was a terrifying portrayal. And also, like, the way they did the Hades scene when him and and Sinon and the others like resurrect
climb out of that dark sand.
Oh my gosh,
that was so cool.
And with Lupita Nyong'o not just playing Helen, but also her twin sister, and that when they do the flashback image of how Agamemnon is killed, like, that was, I mean, again, she, even though she doesn't have a ton of screen time, she, like, the way she did that performance there when she betrays Agamemnon and kills him, like, I was like jumping out of my seat.
There's a whole spinoff series right there. That's absolutely. I could watch a show with that. I could watch a show.
Absolutely.
And that brings me to John Bernthal. Like, my guy. I love how he was just John Bernthal, and that still kind of worked.
I know.
Yeah, he's the Punisher in everything, and that's fine.
Yes. Yeah, I was like, okay, cool.
My picture of meeting him is up on my wall there, but I will go to bat for Bernthal every chance I get, because he was also like the nicest guy when I met him. So my friend saw, as soon as he came on screen, he was like, oh, that's your boy there. I was like, he's okay. But yeah, but that brings an interesting point too, because there was definitely a fusion of, I would say, like, modern sensibilities and classic, like, in very much of the performances. So I'm thinking, like, Anne Hathaway and Robert Pattinson, for instance, you could have had them in, like, a classic Shakespeare play in this. Like, they had that kind of, like, even their dialogue was a little more, like, classic, histrionic. Like, it was great there. And then something like Bernthal's felt more modern, but it didn't feel like it was in another movie at the same time. You know? Like, it was a perfect, like, blend of all these styles and influences, and it all worked, you know?
Yep, it was not out of place.
Holland was great. Holland, so he was good. I thought he was just going to be like, oh, yeah, he's just there like to bring in the younger kids, but no.
Right.
Oh, man, the scene with the dog he finally dies at the end. I'm never going to forget that scene. I'm never – that scene is so – I can't put it to words, but the way they have the restraint, because if he went in to guns blazing, so to speak, like he did with the war and the Trojan horse, he probably wouldn't be the king, or his son wouldn't be there. So he had to restrain himself, and he learned the lesson to not do that Trojan horse again. And to me, a film is its ending. But to me, that is right there was when half the movie, like in Oppenheimer, there's a clear division of before the bomb and after the bomb. And here was before the war's over and after the war's over. And then the two, like, the two kind of lessons that the protagonist was trying to learn. And I just thought it was so freaking effective.
It was. And I love that you used the word restraint, because it's also to, how do you say Tom Holland's character, Temeculus?
Telemachus.
Telemachus. I always, get those two. Telemachus. Now his restraint. Because the second the dog died, he knew
in his eyes
that's his dad, but he wasn't going to blow the cover, because he had just spent that time with John Bernthal, and he said, you know, if you do see your dad, tell him come in the back door. Don't come in like Agamemnon, because that doesn't work out. It was so beautiful. That restraint, it's the perfect word, and played so well on both of their faces.
Perfect. And the first thing that I thought of when I was experiencing that scene, it's, this is the lesson that they were trying to teach with Luke Skywalker. That's kind of what I was thinking with the grumpy old Luke Skywalker. I think they were trying to, in their own way, they were trying to teach that a restraint, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was never Luke's strong suit.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. It's an odd comparison, because again, I just love the and especially the nonlinear storytelling, which Nolan is famous for, and of course that Homer is, and it worked so well here to really show the complexity of Odysseus from perfect hero. There was the image that Telemachus had of his father because he never knew him, and then there is like the man himself and all his flaws and all his strengths and the way he wrestles with that. And I love what it does at the, I mean, that speech he gives to Penelope at the end was so powerful, because he's saying, you know, no, I can never really condone what I did, and I know, like, we, you know, committed basically genocide in the name of, you know, like, our kingdom and whatnot, our own glory. I can never, you know, let go of that, but I have to move on at some point and, like, recognize that, you know, how flawed I am. I mean, that's a really just watered down version of what he actually says, that scene is just going to stick with me for so long. And I love that they don't overshadow on that, and they linger on that image of the Trojan horse, and not as like, a symbol of victory, but as a symbol of, like, oh, we gave betrayal. Up our souls here.
Like,
betrayal.
He and, was the one that brought the death of an age. And there's some weight to that. There's a weight to that. That how, as a human, do you process that? Yeah, sure. This is a fictional character, but that's heavy. That's heavy.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, and this is like a kind of a Nolan thing. It's what every woman in the film is trying to get him to realize. Oof. All along his journey is to, like, actually come to face that and admit it. And then he does admit it at the end.
Right.
Yeah. Every woman is pointing to truth.
Charlize Theron is clearly doing it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Whoa.
And it makes it even more fitting Yeah. Mic drop right there. It does fit. Like, that's perfect why Zendaya's Athena was the only goddess actually depicted.
The way she was
tied in perfectly there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, very few words, but just this lingering presence, a reminder of what he did and destroyed all that was sacred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she does it in human form and not as a, you know, this is what you did, but, you know, like bits and pieces that brings him to it himself. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So good. I know we're just gushing over this, but this is like, we need another podcast to really dissect all the, like, myriad of themes in this movie. Because, I mean, it's 3 hours. Like, there's so much to unpack, but needless to say, we loved it.
Can I give my one critique?
Yes, absolutely.
No, not at all.
And no, it's, way. I mean, I probably have more than one, but this is the biggest is I went to Greece 3 years ago. It was, I had the time of my life, loved it. I have some friends that are Greek. And so we spent about 3 weeks there. And the Aegean Sea and the Ionian Sea are a color of blue that I didn't know existed until I went there. The contrast of the sand and the sea and the buildings, even the super ancient churches that were built by like the very first Christians are so gorgeous and so colorful. And I felt that Christopher Nolan took all of that and turned it into The Dark Knight.
That's fair.
The cinematography was beautiful, but that's not Greece. Like Greece is so vibrant and beautiful. And I'm sure it was 3,000 years ago too. And that I didn't love that.
I'm sure that's an IMAX problem.
Yes.
But no, that, hey, my one critique is they left out the classic pun from the Cyclops scene. I quoted that line all the time when I did the play. But for those of you who don't know, after Odysseus like blinds the Cyclops, and Cyclops asks who he is, he answers nobody. So that when the other Cyclops come to Polyphemus and they ask like who did this to you, he says nobody, nobody. You know, and it's a brilliant pun there. They left out. I still loved what they did with the Cyclops. This portrayal of this sympathetic creature, not just a vicious monster, but yeah. And Nolan talked specifically about how he was influenced by Guillermo del Toro in that regard, and how he portrayed him, and worked with Bill Irwin, the actor. So I loved all that, but the pun is pretty classic. I do wish they had included that. But still, I mean,
one critique that I had, and it's not a critique of the narrative, or it's kind of a critique about the marketing. And it started, and I blame with and I blame the Force Awakens for this, but they said, there's zero special effects in this, and I hate when they say that, because that is erasing the work of a whole industry of people.
Yes,
and absolutely. I just hate that we've gotten to a point where that's the case, and it's like you cannot make a modern day film without at least 1,000 scenes of CGI. Sure, you can go film in the sea and you can film with a giant puppet, but that needs to be replaced with probably CGI and stuff. I just don't like that. I don't like that.
That's fair.
That's all. I mean, I know Christopher Nolan is super gung-ho about shooting on film. Well, in this case, on IMAX, but and making everything practical. But that said, I think CG and AI are two very different things.
100%.
I know that's a whole other conversation, but no, CG is why like, come on, it's led to some of the best movies ever in the last 20 years. So it should be respected. It can be overused, and a lot, there's actually a video recently about why is CG look bad in a lot of movies today. That was actually on Breakdowns of Blockbusters, so that's worth checking out. But nonetheless, I agree, writing it off as this whole I have a problem with that too, so I agree. But
cool,
all in all, I know we're wrapping up here. We'll definitely be discussing Odyssey more, because there's way too much to discuss. Real quick before we go, anyone want to have a quick recommendation? Either you can have, say Odyssey or something else. I'll shout out really quick, in light of Doomsday, read Books of Doom. That was the Ed Brubaker comic I mentioned earlier. That's the best Doctor Doom origin book out there. Jill, do you have any you want to shout out?
I'm definitely going to check that out. Let's keep the John Bernthal love going. And this is a little bit late, but Gary, which was a one-off episode.
That's right.
Spinoff from The Bear. I think that's some of his best work. So I suggest that.
Excellent. Evan, what about you?
I would say go watch the Wishbone episode of this. That's a fun... fun nostalgic trip if you grew up with that.
I love it. Well, Jill, Evan, this has been fantastic. I know we could keep going on and on, but we got to be nice to Joshua, who is our wonderful editor, producer, and leader of the show. So we're going to bow out, but we will be discussing all this in more detail. There's plenty more to discuss on Doomsday Odyssey, so stick around. Thank you all for joining us, and remember, we are all a chosen people, a kingdom of priests. Take care.
Bye.
Hey guys, Christian here. Have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Well, we've made it a lot easier for you by going to Fourth Wall. Instead of what we've done in the past, Fourth Wall makes everything very easy for everyone involved. Everything is in the same spot. So if you want to find a way to become a member and get access to our exclusive memberships and all the giveaways that we're going to be doing, Fourth Wall is the way to go. As well, if you want to see all the extra episodes and content that we only put to our members, that's the best way to go. Feel free to rate and review us there. You can also leave a donation or tip if that's something you're interested in. And as well, you can help support our All Reading Counts initiative that we do. All the donations that go to that go to our libraries. You also, if you really want to, it's like, man, I really want to hear more episodes about Christian for some reason, or even for even reasons I don't understand, you want to hear Joshua more often. We have episodes listed by host, and you can see everyone there. If you have a favorite host, head that way and support the episodes that they're on. You also find a link to our YouTube page. And we may be adding some special content beyond what we've promised. Everything that was once in multiple different locations and you didn't know where to go, well, it's all in that one convenient place. If you want to know exactly where to go, the link to this will be in the description below.
This show is a proud member of the Onazal Podcast Network. Other shows on the network include Be Living Water, where Joshua Knoll discusses various topics from a Taoist Christian perspective, inviting listeners to imitate Christ and be water, beneficial to all, and a conflict with none. Friday Night Frights, Day and Christian Ashley discuss all things frightful, from UFOs to the paranormal to serial killers and more. Kung Fu Pizza Party, where Brandon discusses all things martial arts media, delivering high-flying action and wisdom, one slice at a time, all in under 30 minutes. And my other show, with Christy Whaley, Theology on the Rocks, where two theology PhDs talk about our lives, the world, and theology, all over drinks, clearly. Come on over each week to hear two besties discuss academic nerd stuff while also banter endlessly, especially if wine is involved.